Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
COTA salutes those who served. Veterans ride free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of COTA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use COTA Plus. Veterans ride free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on COTA. Plan your ride and learn more at coda.com/trip planner.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coming up on podcast 1304, the business of e-mobility with Vitaly Golom, an expert in the area. Going to pick his brains today. As always, thank you for listening to the podcast. A Saturday special interview today, which I'm really excited about. Now, Vitaly is a tech investment banker with 20 years experience on all sides of the table. As a venture-backed CEO, a venture capitalist, M&A financing, worked with the likes of Rimats, Biden, Fisker, Hyperloop, Rivian, and many, many more as well. And so not only is he a huge EV fan, and is looking forward to getting his new Rivian as soon as they can make it, but also as part of his day job and his general interest as well, is helping the e-mobility sector and all the things around the business side of it. So as we don't talk about it too much on this podcast, I figured it was time to change that and get him on. So here we go. Let's enjoy this. By the way, if you want to check out his podcast, it's all about, this season has been about the future of mobility. It's called Accelerated, and I'll pop a link in the show notes to that. Enjoy this. I'll be back at the end to say thanks to our patrons. EV News Daily with Vitaly Golom. Welcome to the show. You're from Drake Star Partners, and you join us from the West Coast, San Francisco. Welcome to the podcast. Just give us a quick background of what you do and some of your background, if you would.
Sure, Martin. Thanks for having me on the show. I lead the mobility practice at Drake Star. Drake Star is so far this year, and we're close to the end, the leading tech investment bank in mid-market. And we certainly have the number one mobility practice. Before joining Drake Star, I ran my own boutique investment bank here in Bay Area. And before that, I was a founding partner of HP's corporate venture arm. And before that, most of my career was actually a founder and CEO of various tech startups and grew up in Silicon Valley.
Our listeners will be used to me having guests on who are going to talk about the product, consumer, chargers, the cars, the tech around it. And this is the kind of the first time that we've really taken a bit of a dive into the banking and finance side of it, because it's not a focus on what we talk about on this show, but it's something that's increasingly interested me this year. And I'll dive right in with saying it's because of Tesla, because I don't understand it. And so because I don't own any automotive or mobility stocks, because of my job, I wouldn't do that anyway. It would color my judgment, I think, anyway. So I just see this from the outside. Can you give us a bit of an overview in what on earth has happened in the EV marketplace this year with this kind of beacon at the top of it with Tesla? And from my point of view, a market valuation that I don't understand based on the cars they, you know, the at the moment, the amount of cars they're making.
Yeah, I mean, certainly it's not something that makes any sense if you look at fundamental analysis traditionally kind of this industry and the revenue multiples or the profitability, all those type of factors that usually come into play when you're trying to evaluate companies on their financial performance. What Tesla has done, frankly, you know, Elon Musk has done, is created kind of a story stock and gave a dream to a lot of people. I mean, I equate it more to the phenomenon of FOMO, the fear of missing out, with a lot of, you know, with Bitcoin, with NFTs that we're seeing now. people want to be a part of it. And then you saw the same thing, you know, obviously Tesla's trillion plus valuation has pulled up Rivian at IPO into the 100, 150 billion. They're kind of, you know, going up and down right now before they stabilize. But it was essentially the same idea that people are coming in and they want to be part of this. Now, there's something a little bit more interesting behind that. You know, if you look at how do you evaluate, you know, why do these pure play EV companies have a bigger valuation than the traditional automakers with lower numbers? There's a couple of different ways to look at it. One part that people don't really pay attention to is that a lot of these traditional automakers, they have two big problems. First of all, they have a lot of debt that they're carrying. And then the second part is that the conversion from internal combustion to EV is actually very expensive for them. So for example, BMW, 80% of the vehicles they sell are actually leased. And their lease, you know, the payments for those 3-year leases are based on a certain residual value at the end, which BMW knows very well. The problem is that now during this transition, the secondary market, you know, those cars coming back are not worth, let's say, $35,000. They might be worth $20,000, right? So it's a pretty big gap there that they're going to be carrying on their balance sheet when going through this transition for the next half decade or decade, which is going to be very, very difficult financially for a lot of these players. So it's actually almost easier from that sense financially to be a pure play. Also in US, there's another factor of this franchise laws, right? Way back when Ford, you know, started doing manufacturing, they then sold franchises to these dealers and they partnered with these dealers who were investing their own money to be part of that business. So those laws exist from those days, you know, 100 years ago, where now if you were ever part of this franchise network, you can't really get out of it. And, you know, they can buy out franchises, et cetera, but they're giving away 20, 30% of their margin, where these pure play companies, again, you know, Tesla, Rivian, et cetera, Lucid, of course, they can sell directly. So they eat, the company takes that additional margin. So they can be either super competitive or they can be much more profitable. So there's a lot of different ways to look at it. Of course, at the end of the day, they need to sell, you know, a certain volume of cars. And they need to become mainstream, build a brand, etc. And that's very difficult.
You say it's almost easier to be a startup. Of course, Elon Musk will tell us anytime people ask, it's fabulously difficult to launch a startup EV maker. But the valuations of these companies, to my mind, seems so high based on what they're selling at the moment. So to use those two examples, Rivian hope to make 1,000 vehicles between before the end of the year. We're recording pretty close to the end of the year. And then Lucid, a huge valuation based on having sold nothing yet, but both very established companies, whether it's Lucid with their background in battery tech for Formula E, or Lucid have been Rivian around for, you know, 10 years or so before they kind of found their groove. Let's talk a little bit about why people are so convinced that some of these companies are going to make it. So why do you think cases like Lucid and Rivian have a good case, whereas others perhaps aren't getting the attention?
I'm a big fan of Rivian, kind of full disclosure. I put in an order a couple of years ago. I'm a pre-order holder. I'm going to get one of the first launch editions very soon here, hopefully. And then I've personally invested in the company as well when I had the opportunity. What I like about Rivian is that they've built a brand and they're really thinking, you know, the company's been around for 12 years. They've been working on this, on these first vehicles for some time. They've been road testing them for over 2 years. And that shows you that they're not in a rush. They're doing it right, quote unquote, and they're building a 100-year company. So they're investing a lot into the brand, and you can see a lot of the phenomenon where they have a lot of big fans already, and their vehicles are not there yet. But you know, what are their assets? I mean, first of all, they've raised almost $20 billion net. They have a big factory that's ready for major production. They have discussions on two other factories. You know, they're going to have that volume, and they're going after a market that's huge, and they're going to be pretty unchallenged, you know, more or less. It's going to be them and the Ford Lightning under them, let's say in the truck market in US, but that's 3 million vehicles a year. That's a prime market, right, that they're going into. With Lucid, it's a very nice looking car. It's great tech. You can see their battery efficiency that they've been able to achieve. You know, naturally they're battery experts. But they're going after kind of this luxury segment where they're going to be fighting it out with obviously Tesla Model S, but then of course Mercedes EQS, Porsche Taycan, and kind of that bleeding edge kind of luxury sedan market. And that sedan market's actually shrinking, right? It's more SUV segment and crossover segment that's growing. Besides the fact that I think we've kind of reached peak car and we're probably passed it, and with autonomy, we're going to see that accelerate. The car ownership structure is going to change entirely. So that's, you know, they're getting valued for what they can produce in the future. We'll see, you know, if they can grow into those valuations. I can see it more, honestly, with Rivian, and I'm a little bit biased, than Lucid. But Lucid is also going to be going into the SUV segment as well. It's just a question of when. But they kind of you can see how they prioritize the vehicle so far.
Now, while we have a financial expert on the podcast, we have to ask about SPACs or SPACs. Now, Rivian was fascinating. It was a proper IPO, so we got to find out loads of information with their SEC filings leading up to it. But this year, and to an extent last year, really has been a flurry of activity, which with this kind of vehicle that we never really heard of, well, I never really heard of before using these SPACs, why have they been? And I've explained it a little to our listeners on this show. Like I say, we're not a hardcore financial EV podcast, but why have they been so popular for the last 18 months or so?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like they came out of nowhere, but they've been around for over a decade. And really, without getting into the weeds, SPACs are just an easier way of taking companies public. It's just for the company, it's attractive for smaller companies because they can get out there earlier. It's about half the cost of the fees and half the time to do a traditional IPO. For Rivian, it's clear why they chose traditional IPO. You can see the size of it, right? There's no SPAC out there that could have given them that much money. Well, I mean, Lucid got a pretty big chunk, but Rivian raised something like $9 billion, close to it. So that was just much bigger. And I was talking on my podcast with my friend Mate Rematz, and his view on SPACs. And Mate Rematz, of course, CEO now, Bugatti Rematz. I worked with them years back to actually raise their first substantial round before Porsche came in. But they are also not looking at SPACs. They've evaluated it, and they are probably going to be doing a traditional IPO at some point. And it's probably because of the valuation that they are going to be planning to achieve. Lucid was kind of on the bubble, and they went out there. So did Fisker. I also worked with Fisker a few years back while they were still private. They chose that path as well. So it really, think of it as, the SPAC is a way for companies to go public earlier than they would with traditional IPO. And you really have to think about 20 years back to pre-SOX compliance, right? So with Enron, after Enron and the financial and the dot-com burst bubble of 2001, we got the SOX compliance, which made it much more expensive and more difficult for companies to go public. So therefore, you saw companies go public much later. Before that, they would go public much earlier, and now SPACs give them an opportunity to kind of come back to that. One thing that I'll caution everybody is that these companies, people in the last 20 years have thought about public companies as these big, stable things that are too big to fail, that will do great. It's just a question of how they perform quarter to quarter. With SPACs, we're kind of going back to a little bit kind of dot-com days where the companies go public much earlier, and it's still a little bit more kind of speculative than what people have been used to. So very important to think about these companies and really understand that they're usually a little bit earlier stage of development, one or two or sometimes more years earlier being public than they would be through the traditional path.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino.
You've talked about FOMO. Let's link that to infrastructure. Now, I'll just use the example from where I am here. So we saw our largest network, which was ChargeMaster, get bought by BP, now renamed into the Pulse network. NewMotion, only a couple of weeks ago, rebranded after their acquisition by Shell many years ago now. But they finally changed the branding away from NewMotion to Shell. Ubitricity as well, and Podpoint over here as well. So there's all UK examples of of charging networks or infrastructure being bought by very big players. Is there a sense of FOMO in terms of the charging energy side as well, or am I reading that wrong?
The big energy companies, you know, 10 years ago, all the biggest companies in the world were oil and gas companies, and now it's tech companies. But, you know, we've probably passed peak oil at some point. We're starting to see kind of noises from the industry, and we've seen the gas prices go up, gasoline prices, I should say, go up, kind of go crazy last few months here with supply chain issues and the games in the industry likes to play. But I mean, certainly for them, they see themselves as energy companies. So if these are now electric vehicles becoming more popular, they want to be in that place. So they want, you know, they have the locations, they have the, you know, in the UK, you call it petrol, right? So the petrol stations all over the place. So they have the real estate and they can put the chargers on there. We're certainly working with a lot of charging companies and so, one company we just finished the financing for, they're going to be announcing the most powerful electric car charger in the world that can ultra fast charge four vehicles at the same time. Now, discussions we're having, they're having, is with big gas station franchises, petrol stations that are now looking to put chargers at every station. So it's just a question, though. These are energy companies. They have the real estate. If the industry goes, you know, one direction, maybe it's hydrogen 10 years from now. You're going to see them all run in that direction and be able to service that need.
And let's talk about the wider mobility space as well, which you guys are experts on. Now, I've just come out of hosting Move 2021 at London's Excel, which is a two-day mobility event. And it's a reminder to me as well, we talk a lot about the cars because that's where mostly people are interested in, the Teslas, Rivians, Lucids of the world. But it was a reminder to me being at that conference of just how much activity is going on in that space. What have you seen and what's the latest in terms of the wider mobility from mass transit all the way down to micro mobility? What are your thoughts on that at the moment?
It's a really fascinating transition right now. You know, it's a $5 trillion industry. If you're looking at, if we're talking about freight, we're talking about, you know, passenger vehicles are a small part of that, of transportation. Micromobility has been interesting. For example, in North America and Western Europe, motorcycle sales have fallen by 50% in the last decade. And you've seen micromobility come out of nowhere and become a pretty strong segment. Now you're seeing companies like MV Agusta and Ducati, big traditional, you know, big brands getting into micromobility. Again, you know, these are transportation, you know, vehicle companies that are now chasing their customers towards what their new, you know, desires are. In freight, we're going to see a lot of really interesting things happen. You know, that's where hydrogen makes sense in a certain degree, without, again, getting into the weeds, but kind of the infrastructure piece. It's kind of the VHS and Betamax, right? VHS would be the battery electrics, where the Betamax would be the hydrogen. And VHS really won out because the infrastructure is in place, right? And that really pick up, and probably Tesla is a big part of that, is kind of pushing the infrastructure out where 2009, Mercedes had a hydrogen-powered car that they took across America. It's just a matter of creating those stations. But there are a lot of different things happening. You know, you're seeing in aviation, we're going to see some new generation planes finally, electrics and hybrids. We're seeing, you know, we're working with Hyperloop TT. You're going to hear some big news soon. That's a completely new mode of transportation, fully electric, generates more electricity than it uses. So there's a lot of really interesting things happening kind of across this sphere. And it's probably the biggest transition in 100 years in transportation that we're going through right now. So it's a really exciting time. You know, back when I got involved in this segment, you know, 7-8 years ago, it was very difficult to get investors' interest in EVs. Now it's kind of a foregone conclusion. Everything's going EV. And it's just a question of picking your pony to bet on and invest in.
But, I like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Yeah.
I'm glad you brought up hydrogen. I wasn't going to raise it, but again, at this Move conference a couple of weeks ago, I was hosting, one of the sessions I hosted was with an engineer from Jaguar Land Rover, and she was fiercely smart and was arguing that hydrogen is technically superior. And I didn't go down the whole route of giving her a hard time on stage in terms of the financial side, because that's not her background. But what I wanted to say was, this is all great. I understand the technical side of it and why the engineers, these really smart engineers at the car companies and you know, many of the large companies, whether it's Daimler or Toyota, continues to invest. There is an unanswered question. Well, who's going to build the infrastructure that's required if everyone drives a hydrogen vehicle, because the car companies don't want to do it. Governments don't want to do it, although the EU has had some funding. What are your thoughts as an expert in investment on where that finance could possibly come from if we're going to build out a hydrogen infrastructure, which seems so expensive to me?
Yeah, I mean, it's a chicken and egg, right? Even with electric chargers for battery electrics, you have to kind of raise to the need of the market, right? Nobody's going to invest trillions of dollars or what have you into building out full infrastructure and wait for the people to come with the vehicles. It's going to be piece by piece. So that's a big problem for hydrogen. I think where you'll see it first is in aviation, because you can put hydrogen into the airports, and you'll see it in long haul trucking, where you have kind of, you know, big distances, but they're going, you know, back and forth from one station to another. And you can have the infrastructure there. It makes sense in those cases because you're also talking about weight, right? Battery electrics are very heavy, and you're carrying that battery with you. With hydrogen, you know, you're carrying gas or in liquid form, and it's much, much lighter, and you get that density, the energy density, almost of gasoline, right? At this stage. So, yeah, I think you're going to see it more in kind of these commercial applications first, and certainly aviation about half decade, you know, 5 to 10 years. But it's going to be very difficult to see it on the streets. I mean, you can buy a Toyota Mirai in the United States now, but it's going to be very difficult for you to, you know, go anywhere with it, because there's probably one station, you know, every 50 mile radius of that. And that's in, you know, in Bay Area in California. So it that's really it. That's the issue. And that's what I was talking about is this kind of, you know, you always have competing technologies, and somebody bets on creating the infrastructure and getting that escape velocity. And it's difficult for the other to catch up, even if it's better.
Before you go, and while we've got you, I'd like to talk about different territories around the world. So one of my two electric vehicles might have an MG badge on the front, but it's a Chinese car underneath. MG, of course, a famous British name, but I think of it as a Chinese car because it's made by SAIC. Now, can you give us some insight into where there's some activity around the world that you're finding interesting at the moment? Because again, much of the stories that I talk about tend to be dominated by either the American market or the European market. And I'm trying to tell people, look, there's some really interesting things happening in China as well. But any time that China tends to make the news is when Tesla does something there. But such a huge marketplace. What are you seeing on a global scale at the minute that interests you with different territories and investment around the world?
Yeah, I mean, China is obviously a bigger player. They're the biggest market, and with their government saying basically, they can get things done with a single party rule. They just say, here's the rule, and everybody has to follow it. So at some point a few years back, they said all the taxis in Beijing have to be electric, and the conversion was very quick, much quicker than it would happen in Western Europe or in US. So there's some positives to that, and they have some big companies, NIO, Bike, SAIC, et cetera. So there are big players there, and they're looking to get out to the global market. Another one that just made the news is VinFast out of Vietnam. And I know them well. I got to see them and visit them a few years back when they were just starting out. And it's pretty incredible how quickly they've built what they've built. They've got Pininfarina to design the vehicles for them. They're looking to get into the US market. They just built a US headquarters in Southern California. And they announced all of this at the LA Auto Show last week. You're going to see a lot of global players come in. I think probably the most interesting one that I would focus on is Foxconn's MIH. So Foxconn, of course, the biggest consumer electronics manufacturer, contract manufacturer, Apple, for everything Apple sells, they have decided to build kind of the Android of auto, right? So they're creating the platform, and they're working essentially with coach builders going back 100 years, where they provide the platform, and then startups or established players can build their own designs on top of it. So that's really something to watch. And I think you're going to see a lot of movement there. Great team behind it. The CEO, Jack Chang, was one of the founders of NIO. So that's probably one that I would keep an eye on.
Okay, finally, two large markets. Russia, we talk about so infrequently, but they're just starting to put in some incentives for at least electrified public transport. And the other big market I'd love to talk about, if you have any insights, is India. Again, a huge market that seems that we talk about so little in terms of the mainstream news that filters through. But at some point, everyone's going to be making a transition away from fossil fuels. Any thoughts on those two markets?
Well, Russia is the biggest physical country, but the population is only 140 million, and it's really spread out, right? So really, when somebody says they're going into Russia, they're going into, you know, Moscow area and St. Petersburg area, which is much smaller, right?
Right.
So that's something to pay attention to. You know, and corruption there is still, unfortunately, very, very high. In India, it's a really interesting market. Again, you know, huge numbers, but then you have to look at kind of the middle class population there that can afford any kind of vehicle. That's maybe 20% of the population, right? So, but that's still a couple of hundred million people, 200-300 million people. So that's a huge market. Infrastructure is bad, right? The electric grid, the roads, etc. Mini cars and micro vehicles really kind of came out of there to kind of serve that need. So I would look at different form factors and kind of this kind of this spot between a covered vehicle with seats and micro mobility. You know, three wheelers. You know, those kind of things. You're going to see a big push of EVs there, but the grid needs to catch up. Yeah, you know, there's a lot of work to do. I think it's going to be a few years before you're going to see really big momentum there.
Yeah, I keep boring people with talking about Ola Electric on my podcast, because just the idea of electrified scooters in markets like India just absolutely fascinates me. I think it's such a huge opportunity because, yeah, it not only cleans up the air and it's the right thing to do, but also just in terms of serviceability and running costs, I think it makes a lot of sense. But that's wonderful. Look, thank you so much for your time today and a whistle-stop tour around the world of EVs. Do you want a little plug for your own podcast you mentioned? I didn't know that you did this. You still doing it?
I do, yes. Yes, I do. I do a podcast called Accelerated. And this season, this whole year, we've been doing a series on the future of mobility. So I've interviewed a number of CEOs in mobility who are, you know, friends or you know, otherwise, that are big players. So it's called Accelerated. You can find it on all the podcast platforms. So thanks for the plug, Martin.
Download Accelerated. I think the audience that listens to this show will be absolutely interested in what you're talking about. And it's a pleasure to have you on. Vitaly Golom from Drake Star Partners, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks, Martin. Appreciate it.
Thanks again to our premium partners of the podcast that make these shows happen. Phil Roberts of Electric Future, Brad Crosby, Porsche of the Village in Cincinnati, Audi of Cincinnati East, Volvo Cars of Cincinnati East, National Car Charging on the US mainland and Aloha Charge in Hawaii, Derek Riley from the EV Review Ireland YouTube channel, Richard at rsev.co.uk for buying and selling EVs in the UK, and emobilitynorway.com. Have a good one. See you tomorrow. And remember, there's no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.
Moro Casino. American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Coda salutes those who served. Veterans ride free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of Coda's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use Coda Plus. Veterans ride free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on Coda. Plan your ride and learn more at coda.com/trip planner.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24 month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right.